Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Of course, you're listening here to the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And this is one of our Urbanite Radio stories, one of our best print partners we've been with since the beginning here at WEAA. And every month we turn several of their stories, maybe more than several of their stories in each issue, to a conversation live on the air, to a small mini documentary, to bring those print words to life in a different kind of way. Today we're doing that with our Urbanite Radio stories, and you can go to Urbanite Radio and link to them on our website and see what they're writing about. Pick it up at every newsstand around the city and community, the metro area. But this is an article that they wrote in the magazine called "Under Pressure" by John Motzinger, and it's "Under Pressure: As the EPA Cracks Down on Water Pollution, Baltimore Gets Serious About Reducing Tainted Runoff from Streets and Sidewalks." And we are joined in studio by Kimberly Burgess. Kimberly Burgess is Division Chief of the Baltimore City Department of Public Works Surface Water Management Division. And good to meet you, Kimberly. Welcome to the studio.
Nice to meet you. Thank you.
Bill Stack is Deputy Director of Programs at the Center for Watershed Protection. Bill, good to have you in the studio.
Well, thanks, Mark.
And as we said last time you were here, was at WJHU many moons ago on the show.
I think I was 10 years old.
Maybe even more, but it's good to have you in the studio. Let's talk about this issue. It's really interesting that, you know, we do a lot of programs about the environment on this program and have done so for the last 18 years. And farmers in Maryland get get hit hard as the cause of the pollution all around us all the time. And we never look at urban areas, which is, of course, where most people live and where huge amounts of runoff of nitrogen and phosphorus, not just in Baltimore, but in cities across the country, end up in our waterways. And that's the case in Baltimore, correct?
To a point, yes.
Yep.
So who wants to begin?
Well, actually, it's funny you
Kimberly.
Say that the farmers are always been hit, but when you look at design standards and the way that we have approached water quality and treating water quality, it's been historically based on impervious areas. So really, those higher standards have hit the urban areas and the mostly developed. It's only recently with this large Chesapeake Bay TMDL program that
TMDL meaning?
Total Maximum Daily Load, which is also known as a pollution diet. With this large program, which is one of the largest TMDL programs in the United States ever to be going through, six states are a part of this program. But a lot of focus has been on agricultural and that actual land use. So it's a changing in the approach for water quality treatment.
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, Mark, it's not just – I think we should think of it more in terms of the major sources of pollution historically being farms, factories, and sewage. And people – today or for the past 20 or 30 years are just starting to come to realize that urban runoff should stand shoulder to shoulder with those other sources. And that's hard for us to accept because it's difficult. It's not like you can go to a feedlot and see urban runoff. It's not like you can go to a factory pipe and see urban runoff. It's almost the invisible pollutant until you get into the streams and see the damage caused by the urban runoff with trash, debris, stream bank erosion that you realize how serious the problem is.
One of the things the article points out let me take two steps backward here. I mean, one of the things that the article pointed out to me, and there's always this huge debate over corporate and public responsibility and personal responsibility. We talked about that for a few seconds before the show, Bill. When you have, and we'll talk about some of the things people can do to change things, and we'll get into the details of that. But when you have, as the article pointed out, 640,000 pounds of nitrogen and 55,000 pounds of phosphorus going into the harbor, every year, at least that amount. Now, some people think it's more than that, but at least that amount goes into the harbor every year. Comes off our roofs, comes off the streets in our cars, and the fertilizers that people use on the semi-suburban lawns within the city, and and like that. That is not seen, but that's a huge amount of waste, right?
Right, but it's as Bill had pointed out, it's that invisible waste. It's hard for people to understand. While the number seems large, it's hard to see and feel as opposed to trash. Trash is the most visible pollutant, and it's the one that gets everybody up in arms, and it's the one that personally the individuals can make a huge difference on.
Well, let me tell you, but before we get to the individual part, I'm going to talk about what responsibilities are for this, the public infrastructure. I mean, that is a, I mean, there are issues. We'll talk about how to catch your rainwater, all the other things that we can do, and picking up trash and not tossing things out. And those are very critical and drives me crazy when I see people throwing things out of their car and just dropping me in the middle of the street and they get flushed into the waterways. And it's just one of those things that irks me all the time. Having said that, I mean, the infrastructure problem Baltimore has is huge. We have a crumbling infrastructure under the city. Right. And it'll cost billions and billions of dollars to really fix that. Mm-hmm. A conversation I had with a guy who is working on D.C.'s infrastructure. And I asked him a question. I said, well, how much will it cost to really fix this sewage and water system in Washington? He said, nobody knows. It's a huge number to get this right.
Yeah. Do you want to start first?
I'll start.
And just as background, it's also good to realize that prior to his role with Center for Watershed Protection, Bill Stack was a member of DPW for
many years.
And we'll just leave it at many years.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I guess the water infrastructure can be divided into three elements: water, wastewater, and stormwater. And in some communities like District of Columbia, Portland, Philadelphia, a large part of the sewage and stormwater infrastructure are commingled and have to be addressed together. Most communities have funding sources for sewer and water infrastructure, but not necessarily for stormwater infrastructure. And that's where the problem is, that streets are crumbling. We have these mandates from EPA, but yet we do not have a funding structure in place.
Well, we call it an unfunded mandate.
Yes.
Well,
underfunded,
well,
I should say.
For the water quality, there's been a lot of unfunded mandates, but there have not been any mandates yet as far as addressing the older infrastructure that's in a lot of our cities, both on East and West Coast. I find it very strange that the federal government is able to fund so much on the street surface, and yet they neglect the largest voids, which are our pipelines for stormwater underneath of that street surface. And it's going to be a change of mind and understanding of what we call infrastructure and what we want to invest in infrastructure. It's going to take that on a congressional level for anything to work.
And how many miles of the infrastructure exists in Baltimore City?
Got that.
I figured you would.
We have over 1,100 miles of pipeline, over 52,000 inlets and 27,000 manholes, and over 1,700 outfalls. Those are that's where the pipes come out to a stream or
how many?
To the harbor.
Did you say was that number? The last
17 number? Over 1,700
pipes that dump whatever is being
into the harbor or into our streams,
which end up in the harbor,
right?
Which end up in the bay,
right? Even that direct connection, if it's amazing when we talk about the individuals, for individuals to understand that direct connection, that it doesn't go to some central treatment plant like a wastewater system does.
Because we are, well, this is maybe, I don't want to get too off the subject here, but maybe think of that Baltimore really is, when you think of Baltimore, Baltimore is a watershed that we have paved over. This was a land of rivers that was kind of paved over. There's an interesting Morgan professor who has a plan about how you can unearth those rivers and let them flow and change the whole nature of the city, which I have found really interesting.
we'd lose a lot of our major roads. We've been working with
not a bad idea, maybe.
We could boat instead of driving.
That
would be wonderful. Sure. We've been working with the idea of, in our outreach, that our streets are our streams. Because basically underneath of our major roadways, we have pipeline systems that are 10 feet wide, 8 feet tall underneath of our roadways. They may be as shallow as 5 feet below or 50 feet below.
And many of them are 100 years old.
Yes, but I will say this, due to the craftsmanship and the skill set that was there with the laborers 100 years ago, they are sustaining much better than you can see in some of the other products that may have been installed in the 80s or 90s.
That says a lot, doesn't it? But that to me seems to be a particular focal point. And the article itself we're talking about talks a great deal about what we can do as citizens, mm-hmm. but it seems to me we sometimes get to that point when we are in a quandary about not being able to answer the larger governmental, corporate, municipal questions about how to deal with the bigger issues. So then we end up saying, well, you can catch rainwater, and that helps a lot, but. So it seems to put the onus on us when the onus really is perhaps on us as well because we can change our lifestyles, but it's on the larger structures that really where the attention should be focused, should it not?
Well, when you design a storm drain pipe, I'm an engineer in practice. I never design for it to be 50 to 60% clogged with trash. I design it for it to be free and that it's going to carry those rainfalls that's expected. And so when the individual is constantly throwing trash in, yes, it's a water quality problem, but it's also affecting the performance of how that pipe's going to work. And it becomes a public safety problem. You know, that's why we're having flooding problems where theoretically there should not be any because the pipe is sized correctly and it's in good shape. So that's where the individual can play a part.
But the water that goes down the pipes from our city is where a lot of the nitrogen and phosphorus exist.
I mean,
coming from rooftops, coming from waterways, coming from our tires, coming from our cars.
Yes.
And the oil we dump from many things. I mean, that's
pet waste. Yes.
Pet waste and all the rest.
Sewage as well.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I should say that there are problems that municipal government can fix, and of course. There are problems that individual homeowners have to get to. Municipal government has to address the sewage issue, and they're doing it. They're spending close to $1 billion on a consent decree, but there's a lot more that can be done. And with trash, government has the responsibility ultimately to keep trash out of our waterways. And there are a lot of synergies too. It's not just trash. If you keep trash out, you keep out a lot of leaves and debris. And when you look at the contaminants associated with leaves and debris,
that's right.
it becomes huge. And mm-hmm. a potential cost savings. You think you're paying money to reduce trash when, in actuality, you're also addressing issues with nutrients. It's just like reducing sewage. You're not only addressing bacteria, but you're reducing nutrients as well. And identifying these synergies is the responsibility of government and can really help tear down these institutional barriers, which I think have prevented us from solving this issue holistically.
Right. The other problem is that you're trying to compare treatment like you do a wastewater treatment where it's collected and then treated in one central location. You can't do that in stormwater. And it really needs to be done throughout the entire system, best if it's done at the source rather than at the end of the pipe or even through the pipe for the most maximum efficiency. That's one of the reasons why the low-impact development or environmental site design practices are becoming more in favor for state and federal governments. It's the difference between having a large room and trying to clean the entire floor with one bucket and one mop, and compare that to having 100 people in there with toothbrushes and their own separate bucket. You get a better efficiency, mm-hmm. but you have to put more money and time into those resources to do it.
So going back to the source,
yes.
I mean, because basically what you're talking about, the infrastructure that may be crumbling underneath of us has to be fixed mm-hmm. is there. But that infrastructure just funnels what is dumped into it.
That's correct.
It's not a cleaning mechanism. It's a funneling mechanism, right?
There is no special magic treatment in the middle of that, no.
Right. Now, these little devices in there that filters out all the crud and
no magic pixie dust, no.
No pixie dust in there. So it's the source. So let's talk about the source and what's causing it. What did the article point out, which I didn't realize, that 64% of the nitrogen and phosphorus that's in the harbor comes from runoff in the city? Is that right? Or is that more?
Well, I guess you have to define the drainage area of the harbor is over 600 square miles, and most of the water that makes up the harbor, the outer harbor, comes from the upper Susquehanna River. So during large storms, you will get runoff from the immediate watershed areas such as Gwynn's Falls and Jones Falls, which can have a profound effect on the water quality. The percentage of nutrients coming from urban runoff, it's in this watershed, I would say it's, it would have to be close to 60% because most of the watershed
is comprised of that.
Urban runoff.
Right. Well, we really only have in the city two major source sectors. Bill was referring previously to the sources, and those are our wastewater treatment plants, and then the other one being urban regulated stormwater runoff. So those numbers don't seem that far off.
And because a lot of it does come from the north of us with the industrial pig farms and everybody else that lives north of us in Pennsylvania and dumps into Susquehanna, dumps into us. As farmers in Maryland like to point out to me, if you look at where the pollution ran in the bay, it ran from the north to the south. It didn't start in the middle. And they are right about that, I think. But looking at what you all are talking about in terms of what we can, how we can change what we do in the city, both in terms of we'll get to the question of what new building construction can do in all these downtown office buildings being put up. But let's talk about this whole notion of what we can do as individuals where we live and people who own buildings where people live in, how we can change what we do.
Day-to-day activity, look at ways of reducing your usage of a car or a vehicle, walk, bike, take public transportation. That's with going with the tires and the combustible engine. The front of your walkway and your sidewalks for especially commercial businesses, instead of spraying down all of the trash, because there's this mentality of if I don't see it, it just goes away, out of sight, out of mind. Instead of spraying it down, actually sweep it up and contain it in receptacles, and instead of just putting it down into the gutter, looking at the types of fertilizers that you use, looking at the properties to see how you might be able to contain some rainwater, whether it's through rain gardens, rain barrels, cisterns that can be reintroducing the water in as gray water and for toilet water, or just you can reuse it on hot days like today when we don't have storm water when you want to water your plants. There's a lot of ways to just keep it right there on your property. Other ways is just being a part of stream cleanups, neighborhood cleanups, looking at ways that you can change your landscape, even adding a tree. I mean, it's just as simple as adding a tree onto your property. I've been caught in my fair share of storms, and that you can tell the difference on a lighter storm. If you stand underneath a tree, you're not even getting that runoff to hit the streets and carry down into our storm system because the tree intercepts it and uses it. So there are simple things that can be done.
Kim, I think you named 99% of them. Certainly controlling pet waste, even one of the most important things is to stay informed about bills that are in the legislature, support things such as, I hate to say it, a rain tax or stormwater utility. That's just an example.
A rain tax? What does that mean?
Well, it's an unfortunate name for a fee system, enterprise system, where households are assessed on the basis of the amount of stormwater their house contributes. For instance, it's modeled very similar to a water utility fee As I mentioned, there are three utilities. There's a water utility. There's a public fee for that. There's a wastewater utility. And there's a public fee. I think it's $40 a quarter. And a lot of the more progressive cities and counties have a stormwater fee. And, of course, the naysayers say, well, it's a rain tax. And you know, but that is the missing, really the missing source of funding that we need to address this problem.
Because it's not seen as a true service.
What's not seen as a true service?
When they say it's a rain tax because the management of stormwater, whether it's conveying it in our infrastructure or treating it before it gets out into the receiving waters, there's just not that public mentality that it's seen as a service. It's just taken for granted. And that's why it's been difficult in other municipalities to get those types of utilities passed. But as I pointed out, it's the largest void that's underneath your roadways. It's the largest infrastructure that you're going to see within the city or any of the counties.
The largest infrastructure?
Mm-hmm. Largest pipe systems, both in diameter and then also in length.
For the rainwater you're talking about, pulling the rainwater out into the major
city. You don't have a sanitary sewer system that's going to be that large, okay, especially if it's separated.
So this might be interesting, but people don't realize it. I saw in the article, I knew that 40 inches of precipitation comes down through Baltimore every year. We actually get more rain in Baltimore than they do in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have more intense storms,
More intense storms. They have more constant rain,
yes,
and drizzle in Seattle, where my brother lives and makes heat. Depressed living in the greenness all the time, which we have, at least we have sun, but we have more rain coming in. So that's a really interesting phenomenon, that this is a very rainy area despite the drought that we experience here as well. So that the idea of capturing rainwater, let's just talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
Capturing rainwater, I think, is a fascinating idea, and what it can do whether you are a homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to talk about cost of investment to do that. I think that's important because this is a tight economy. People don't have a lot of money to spend.
Yeah.
The idea of not having downspouts, but catching your rainwater in a different way. What it says for people who own apartment buildings. What it says for the corporations and developers that own all the buildings, these buildings downtown where they have offices and people work in. I mean, we're talking about capturing rainwater. This is not just a responsibility of Mark Steiner and every other person who owns a home. It goes beyond that.
Does.
So let's talk about what that could look like and mean. Let's go pie in the sky for a minute, then come back to reality.
Okay.
What would it be like for a city like ours to have a massive campaign to say we're not going to have any more downspouts, we're going to catch every drop of rainwater that comes down? What would that mean?
Well,
it's a little bizarre.
It's not bizarre because I just left a house
okay. That
someone built.
Mm-hmm.
Where every drop of rainwater is caught and then reused in that house.
I would like to see that because usually when we design things, we don't do it for every drop of rainwater. We design it for a certain storm, whether it be a one-year storm or a two-year storm. But there's always an allowance for a bypass for a larger storm, like a 100-year storm, which was Hurricane Isabel that came through.
Yeah, all right.
So,
right.
But I think what you want to do is look at getting that first 1 inch of rainfall. That is the most important. It's called the first flush. And if you go back to your early days, you know, that was just a couple of years for you gentlemen, the early days of driver's ed where the early days of driver's ed where they told you the most dangerous time for you to drive would be the first time when the rainfall is happening, because that's when all the oils are going to come up off of the streets. It's the toughest time to drive, and that's exactly what it is. It's the most concentrated polluted water that's coming off. That's that first flush. That's that 1 inch. You asked before about the pie in the sky and what we could do downtown.
I didn't mean pie in the sky because I think I'm talking about what I think is reality. I'm just saying pie in the sky because we don't want to pay for what we have to do.
Well. There's no way you're going to get rid of the need for the stormwater infrastructure. So I think that was
what I'm saying is that if we had a rainwater capture system,
mm-hmm,
and made it affordable,
right,
and made buildings have to do it who house many people or many offices, you could flush every toilet in that building or house with that. You could use that rainwater and recapture it for other things, for gardening around your house. That water could be captured and used.
Could be, yes.
You know, it's not just, And I think we don't think about that, but how that could happen.
Well, that could happen, but and in fact, District of Columbia is doing a lot of reuse. They have a lot of reuse projects. A lot of new developments are coming in, and they're managing their stormwater. But one of the issues is the local health departments require a fairly high level of water quality in order to reuse that water because of concerns about pathogens that end up in the water and things such as heavy metals. It certainly should and is a consideration if you're building a new project.
Or redeveloping, yes.
Or redeveloping. But there's not the incentive for a homeowner to go back and to retrofit their house to be, gray water, put in a gray water system. Mm-hmm.
That would take an effort in terms of our tax structure and code structure to allow people to actually do things like that and put in solar, get tax rebates. The only way it would work if people were allowed to, people could begin to do it if we made it affordable for people to do.
Not just to install, but also to maintain.
To maintain.
That's a big part. All of these efforts that we'll be undertaking in the next 10 years to keep up with these mandates, maintenance is going to be the key part to it all.
So let's go to two areas here as we have time to do. One is I want to talk about what you think our personal responsibility is in this and what we should be doing. And then I want to hear about what you're doing in terms of where we have to go as a city and what's under you. Bill, you want to start off with the other?
Well, as far as personal responsibility, I think the first thing an individual can do is stay informed, as I said, perhaps join a local watershed group. We have one of the best in the country here, Blue Water Baltimore.
And what is Blue Baltimore? Tell folks what that is, because I think people do not know what that is.
Blue Water Baltimore is a nonprofit environmental, a watershed group. It's that resulted from a merger of several, which include the Jones Falls Watershed Association, Gwynns Falls, Herring Run, Direct Harbor, and the Baltimore Harbor
Waterkeeper.
They realized that there were economies of scale that by forming this merger, they wouldn't necessarily be competing against each other for grant funds, and by and large, they have the overall same mission.
They do.
And they formed this merger.
Right. And I want to point out what they've been doing is working with the city and the Cleaner Greener Coalition for doing a grassroots campaign for getting people involved and informed. And this past Monday, they were able to do a large depaving project.
What does that mean?
Basically, removing the pavement at one of our local schools here in Hamden. Almost an acre of pavement was removed, and they had almost 300 volunteers. Over 100 of them were roadies and other staff of the Vans Warped Tour that, after having 20 days of work and their first day off, showed up at 7 a.m. ready to volunteer and come out and play.
Uh-huh.
The Vans Warped Tour, yes. So it was a great effort, but they're a great private partner for the city because they can do a lot with their volunteers and really make a difference. So being informed was one.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably, and practicing what you preach, too,
mm-hmm.
In terms of recycling, proper disposal of household waste, which also includes the waste that you put down the sink.
Right. Yes.
And Kim had listed all of the other things. Look to see where you can disconnect your roof leader. If it can, then there are alternatives such as rain gardens, rain barrels, things such as that.
And one other thing, they can be a part, the individual can also be a partner with the city by just using our non-emergency 311 program for simple things like water main breaks and sanitary sewer overflows. The quicker we can get eyes on there and be alerted to that problem, the faster we can fix it.
I think it'd be good to talk about the sheer magnitude of the the tasks that we have to meet our requirements for cleaning up our streams, meeting the Chesapeake Bay goals. Montgomery County, for instance, did a plan, and they figure it's going to cost them over the next 20 or 30 years over $1 billion.
Right.
And that's just the price tag. And people have to get used to that. And here we're in the city where, you know, the mayoral candidates are talking about rolling back the property tax. So how do we then convince people that there is this mandate out there and we're going to have to shell out money out of our pockets in order to build this new infrastructure to treat and reduce stormwater runoff?
I think the way that we look at this, because it's nobody ever wants to say, I don't want the water quality to improve. You'll never get anyone to admit it. But in our day-to-day lives, it's very hard to put that as our number one priority, especially here in the city and in this economy. But what we need to realize is that as we put in the green infrastructure or even improve our existing pipelines, and when I say green infrastructure, we're talking about anything from a tree pit to a rain garden to some of these curb bump outs to reusing some of our vacant lots in a depressed area, not a pond, but a bioretention area that could be used. As we introduce all of this, we have to realize what the secondary effects are. You're going to have an increased public safety as people become more aware and are clogging our pipes up less. The introduction of so many trees and increasing our tree canopy is going to have a decrease in asthma as well as greenhouse gases. There's also that element of improving the aesthetics in our neighborhoods and actually bringing them together so that the neighborhoods have an identity. I mean, I really appreciate the city of Baltimore for their neighborhoods and the communities having that sense of identity. This is a way to embellish that and to improve it. And I have yet to see a study that has shown that green space has ever brought property values down. It usually brings it up, and that's what we're all needing here in the city. So those are those secondary effects that we need to pay attention to.
Well, I look forward to continuing this, especially with our look at our vacant lots in the city and urban farming and how we can change the way the city looks, what the city is a pioneer in this country doing. And so I want to thank Kimberly Burgess, Division Chief at the Baltimore City Department of Public Works, Surface Water Management Division.
Long card.
Long card. Bill Stack, Deputy Director of Programs at the Center for Watershed Protection, for joining us for one of our Urbanite Radio stories. Thank you so much. It's good to have you all in the studio. And this is from the article Under Pressure in this month's Urbanite magazine, which you can link to on our website and also pick it up all around the town. That's UrbaniteBaltimore.com is their website. And I'm Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Thank you all so much
for
being here.
Great.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. You can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com.